This is Jack Donahue speaking. I'm interviewing Will Ravinas today on the subject of the restaurants that have existed in Bucks County during Will's time here. Will is a Solbury resident. He's the local historian and author of many books, and we're conducting the interview in Will's home office in Solbury. The date is December 9th, 2014. Will is 86 years old, and he's been a Solbury resident for 61 years, and so he's experienced quite a few restaurants in that time. So, Will, tell us about them.
Well, Jack, this is a restaurant review, which I concocted the other day. But I think I can speak with authority because I've already written the book called Early Taverns of Bucks County.
Yes.
It's out of print. Yep. It came out in 1965, I think.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Yep.
And I just got intrigued wandering around, seeing various restaurants, pubs, whatever. And at that time, in concocting the book, I traced the roads. The Durham Road, the River Road, Old York Road, etc., and the others, and then said, well, about every 7 miles there should be a tavern. And so I put this history together on the basis of the transportation routes through Bucks County. The subtitle of the book was One Beer in 100 Bars. I didn't quite get that high, but it was a lot of fun, and it did involve a few beers. But the book is out of print, except on the on Solbury Township Historical Society's website. What I was thinking about was the variety of bars and restaurants that have been in existence in my general area. Now, I live just a mile above Center Bridge, 4 miles above New Hope, 3 miles below, 1 mile below Lumberville, a couple miles below Point Pleasant. I live up on the hill above the river. So that's my locus. And since I've been around here for 60-plus years, I have had the chance to visit. And my thinking here is to talk about what the restaurants were like in the olden days, that is to say, the 1950s. And I've arranged it in order geographically, starting upriver and coming down through New Hope, and then taking a side trip to Lambertville versus Doylestown. The first one that I remember was actually a tea room. In the olden days when there were tea rooms and people took trips out to the country for tea and biscuits. And this one was called The Cat and the Fiddle. And that, of course, relates to a child's story of olden days. And this place was up along the river above Point Pleasant.
Yep, towards Smithtown, a little bit south of Smithtown.
And there was a cutout of a cat with the fiddle up on the side of the chimney. So it was popular as such, and people took day trips from the city just to have tea and crumpets at the Cat and Fiddle.
Might add the building is still there.
Yes, yep. As a private residence.
Yes.
All right, then coming south, another one. There are about 20 some of these, so I will just go from what I remember along the way. The next one south was the Mountainside. Mountainside is a building that's still there. It's owned by Jack Thompson of Thompson Toyota in Doylestown. Jack also owns the Black Bass. And the Mountainside was a hotel. I remember that when I walked the canal back in the 60s, it was so abysmally hot that I got only from my own house to the Mountainside and stayed there overnight for a grand total of $3.50. that included breakfast for the good old days.
So you made it about 4 or 5 miles that day.
Max. I was done for after that.
Yeah.
The mountainside may be renovated into an establishment again, but right now it's essentially derelict and seems to be getting some repairs.
Yes,
from Thompson.
Yeah, it's been stabilized and looks pretty good from the outside, yes.
So what his plan is or when it'll be completed, I don't know. The next one in my record is what is now called the Golden Pheasant. But I remember it as Jacob Oberacher's Tavern. Jacob was gone. His daughter was running it in the old style. And I remember going out with my buddies on Friday or Saturday night to Oberacher's to have a nickel beer. And you could get a pitcher for 50 cents. So we could spend quite a number of hours over a pitcher or two and not be broke after the end of the evening. It was what remains of the old German style. In due course, it was sold to Michelle Faure and Barbara, his wife, F-A-U-R-E. You spell his name that way, but on the other hand, his license plate on his car was Chef and then number 4, which was, of course, absolutely correct. It was Chef 4.
Yeah.
He had 4 children, I think, three girls and a boy, and all the girls had to have names starting with B. And they are the ones that are now running the restaurant. So what I've effectively seen is 3 generations of the same building, same restaurant, that is now somewhat more elegant, the Golden Pheasant. And it's a long day since you could get a nickel beer in the Golden Pheasant.
Yes, it is. But it's a wonderful redo of the Golden Pheasant that's occurred in the last few years.
And they still have the mule out front?
Yes.
A program called Miles of Mules. The objective was to raise money for the canal, both here and other charities in Bethlehem, so that it was a major endeavor. There were 180-some mules originally.
Great.
There are only a few of them still standing. At any rate, the Golden Pheasant is a fine place and has happy memories. The next one coming south is the Gobblers. The Gobblers doesn't exist anymore. It was washed away by the flood in Point Pleasant. You went up the river road and then you turned right over the canal bridge and a sharp right down into the Gobblers parking lot. The Gobblers was an inexpensive, your dinner was frozen when you got there and it went through the microwave and that was it. No fancies. It had a band and it had a dance floor. And the owner was a guy named Joe Butera, B-U-T-E-R-A. Joe had been the bass man for Artie Shaw in the great days of swing. And he retired with his bass fiddle and almost every night would pull it out and accompany the gal who played the piano, and that was live music in the neighborhood. It was really great fun.
Yes.
And they played basically jazz, which was perfectly good and danceable and kind of a fun evening out.
His brother was in the Louis Prima band.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so they were a real musical family.
All right.
In the 50s.
Sadly, in the 04, 05, 06 floods along the Delaware River, the Gobblers was not just damaged. It was destroyed. And so there's nothing but a foundation there.
Yep.
And dreams of people who would like to rebuild it, but it's a tricky business to build on a floodplain.
Yes, it is. You do hear that, though. People would like it to be back.
Well, anybody who's gone to the Gobblers in the olden days remembers it vividly and says, ah, yeah, right. There was a it was not a fancy tourist joint. It was a local joint, mm-hmm. and a lot of people enjoyed dancing there.
Yep.
Coming south, the next one is the Black Bass. And when I came here in 1953, it had recently been purchased by Herbie Ward. Herbie owned it for about 47 years. And Herbie ran a very solid operation. He had a partner for a while, but the partner unfortunately got killed in an automobile accident. But Herbie carried on, and there are all kinds of stories of the Black Bass back to 1745. It has been recently renovated. Perhaps the most colorful story is that the original River Road was where the canal is now. And in 1831, the Canal Authority said, we're going to dig where the road is, and we're going to move the road up topside, where it is today. And all the houses had to turn around and face the new road. At that time, they built a stone wall to hold up the Black Bass from the waters of the canal. And in the 1970s, Herbie approached the state and said, the canal wall is falling down, and it's your responsibility to repair it, not mine. And he took the case to court. It never actually got into court because the state finally said, gee, he was here in 17... or the inn was here in 1745, and the canal didn't come till 1831. Maybe we do have responsibility. So for a modest, what, $250,000, they rebuilt the stone wall that shores up the Black Bass against the terrors of the canal. One of the things Herbie did was have a bar room, and the significance is that the bar were actually bars around the enclosure for beer and wine in the earliest 16th century. The liquor had to be barred off from the public, and so this he had an enclosure, at least simulated, to be a bar room. That has since disappeared, I believe.
Well, there is a bar in there. There is a...
On the left?
on the right as you enter.
No. That's quite different.
Okay.
Herbie put in a real modern bar where you could sit up and have a drink. And that's important because behind the bar is a showcase for the coronation coach of Elizabeth II.
Yes, and that's still there.
Herbie was an Anglophile.
Right.
And he collected everything he could, and he traveled to England periodically and brought back all the plateware and, I guess, mostly plateware and porcelainware. But he brought back the royal coach, and there it is, yep, behind the bar.
And these things are all on display today in the bar at the Black Bass.
It was claimed by him that the bar itself is in pewter and had been in Maxime's restaurant in Paris. And I don't think there's anybody that will dispute that at
no.
this point.
No, it's still claimed.
Herbie ran his business informally, and I know that I had visions of grandeur at one point. And I approached him and I said, I'd like to buy this place. And he'd then operated it for 35 or 40 years. And he was not beyond at least entertaining such an idea. We never got to a price. But I said, Herbie, do you have a balance sheet and operating statements? And he said, huh? And I said, well, how do you run the business? And he said, well, it's fairly simple. I have a series of envelopes. And as the receipts come in for the first, second, and third of the month, I put them in the meat envelope. And when I think I have enough money to pay off the meat man, then I switch to the vegetable man. And I load that envelope with checks or credit card stubs or whatever until I figure I have enough money for the vegetable man. And then I get to the dairy man and the fish man and, of course, the help who wait on tables and the chef. And you say, when I get all done, I figure anything that's left over after my estimates, that becomes my money. And that was the sum total of his bookkeeping system. He had a lady that came in and did taxes periodically, but I didn't get much help out of her either. So I moved on and was amused at his informal bookkeeping system. The next place coming south is the 1740 house, which is a really a motel a residence with a modest dining room for which you have to have membership.
I believe that's right, yes, today.
You pay $100 a year, and then you can make a reservation for the inn. It was run by a man named Larry Nessler, who created a classic advertisement in the New Yorker, and it appeared routinely every other week, year-round, for many, many years. And the slogan was, if you can't be a guest in a Bucks County house, be ours. And it worked, and he ran a sizable business there. I think he had been in the advertising business before he bought the restaurant. But it's a lovely spot. I would mention, just in passing, the Cartersville Inn, which was owned in the olden days by Sylvanus Kling, K-L-I-N-G. Sylvanus ran an antique shop, a furniture restoration, and a restaurant, all combined. And the Cartersville Inn is still essentially decorated with pressed tin ceiling, just like it was in the 1950s. The food is upgraded, but the surroundings are still the same. It's a classic country inn. The next one coming south is the Cuddalossa Inn, which the inn building stands today. It's on the south side of Cuddalossa Road, coming through in the creek. Originally, in the early 1900s, the inn was on the other side of the road, which is now a residence. And it was known as the Hard Times Tavern. The issue being that the proprietor was renting the space, and when before the canal came in, he didn't have very much business. He was really off any beaten track. So when the landlord came and demanded payment, he said, "It's hard times," and he put a sign out front, "Hard Times Tavern." The current inn is under construction in 2014 and has been for the last couple of years after the damage of the floods. It had been owned by Eddie and Amanda Culligan, and the Culligan family included Bill and Charlie, three brothers, all in the restaurant business. The other two brothers operated the Culligan's Inn in Stockton, which they inherited from their mother. And I don't know beyond that. Mm. But Eddie and Amanda came over here and ran the Cuddalossa Inn and had their children there. And I know that they used to have ample amounts of ice cream, because some of my neighbors' kids used to sneak down there regularly and get their fill of ice cream from the back room. Huh. The Cuddalossa Inn is now owned by Duff and Carr. I think it's Ed Duff, I'm sorry. he's run into a problem because he's taken the site of the old mill, which is now to be, has been a restaurant and bar, and he wants to make it into a barbecue pit and serve barbecue meals there. Only problem is the neighbors don't like the idea of the smell and the smoke of the barbecue, and so they've filed in the township to oppose him, and he's now stuck. He's got part of the construction done, and he hasn't completed it, and he hasn't rehabilitated the restaurant, and so there it sits, kind of in the middle of renovation without completion.
Yeah, the work stopped, I guess, over a year ago now, and nothing's going on.
And the neighbors say he's not going to put in a barbecue pit. If he wants to run a restaurant, that's fine. And it doesn't seem to be clear what's happening. The firm, Duff and Carr, are commercial electricians. They do big buildings and housing. I mentioned Eddie and Amanda Culligan, and the two brothers, Bill and Charlie, ran the Stockton Inn very successfully for a long, long time. That was a favorite place. You go in the front door and turn right into the restaurant, and the restaurant today is like many other restaurants, white tablecloths, and soft candlelight, and fireplace. You go in the front door to the left, there's an old-time bar, and that's where the locals go. And so you can go in there and maybe not a nickel beer, but you do get a traditional country bar, and it seems to do a very good business. Coming south, the next one that I know is the Centerbridge Inn. Now, when I moved out here in 1953, it was a stone residence, essentially a Pennsylvania farmhouse in two sections. It was very modest in size, but it was located at the bridge of Center Bridge, which incidentally is older than the New Hope Bridge. And the issue there is it was the first bridge built in 1712, I believe, or the first ferry in 1712, and New Hope didn't start to 1714. I think the horses had a choice in relocating business to New Hope because the grade up the River Road, or up the Lower York Road as it's called, is better out of New Hope than the steep grade out of Centerbridge. Be that as it may, the Centerbridge Inn was a modest and very pleasant place. When I first came here, it was owned by a Danish chef named Sven. Sven reportedly had a family in the old country, but he moved over here and married a gal from Stockton. Business was not booming, and so my buddies and I went to him one night and said, "You know, Sven, we have a wonderful time. We go out and shoot ringneck pheasants, but we're not terribly good at cooking them." And he said, "Ah, you bring the dead bird in on Tuesday, and I will serve it to you on Thursday night." And so for a number of times, we did indeed shoot ringneck pheasants and then bring them to Sven to cook for our Thursday night feast. We were virtually the only ones in the place. I mean, maybe another couple or two. But it's not like today when the dining room is crowded on Tuesday. This was a small operation. Exactly who owned the Centerbridge Inn in 1961, I'm not sure. But they had a disastrous fire in the middle of the winter. And the problem was that the fire company came full of enthusiasm, but the canal was frozen solid, what water was in it, because in those days they drained the canal during the winter to keep from ice damage. As ice expands, it was pushing the walls out. So there was no water to be had in the canal, and they didn't have hoses long enough to reach down into the river. So there were the firemen standing watching the Center Bridge Inn burn to the ground. It was subsequently acquired by Dewey Lee Curtis. And Dewey Lee was always known as Dewey Lee because he was Southern. And he came from the South and he wanted a Williamsburg Georgian building, which he built there. Now, he was a reasonably smart guy because he had been the curator at Pensbury for a number of years. So he obviously came with a certain amount of intellectual background. He and his buddy Joe Stanley lived in Sintra, which is the house across the street from the high school in Newhall. Sintra is potentially under restoration if and when Bob Hillier and the city and the town come to an agreement on the work to be done. But Dewey Lee decided that he was going to have a Southern mansion there. Never mind how a restaurant ought to be organized, he was going to have the kitchen in the cellar and the dining room on the first floor. And the waiters could just jolly well carry those trays up and down for every meal. Totally impractical, but that didn't seem to bother Dewey Lee. And so he rebuilt it. It survived, and ultimately it's now owned by Jerry Moran, who additionally owns the two canal boats that sit derelict in the river.
And
big
new
canal.
And there's a big new addition in the back, too, off the canal.
Jerry Moran apparently is doing well because he's built the an addition out over the porch and then a deck on top of that.
Yep.
And it's a pleasant place to eat. But it was quite different in the 1950s. The next place I would mention is the Hotel du Village, which, again, is another one that's now under restoration, rehabilitation, modernization, who knows. It was owned by the Arbani family for many years. He was from Morocco, and she was American. She was the maitre d', the hostess, and he rustled the kitchen. A very attractive place, which I have described in greater detail in a little book on Centigrade, on Catalossa. There's a long history of the architectural design and the interior walls that are out of the 20s. Quite a wonderful place with a French cuisine. Also with a French cuisine was a restaurant called Au Bonne Auberge. Au Bonne Auberge was up in Village 2. It was the original farmhouse in the Village 2 redevelopment. It was owned by the Caranellos, who recently closed. They did very well. It was quite pricey, and they had orchids on every table and a menu to match. It was magnificently done, but it was definitely the old world and was very popular accordingly, particularly for people coming down from New York who were used to New York prices and thought nothing of a sumptuous dinner at Au Bonne Auberge. The Logan Inn down in the village has been through numerous hands. Perhaps the most intriguing is the story of why it's called Logan. It is actually named for an Indian. And the Indian was a friend of James Logan, who was William Penn's colonial secretary, provincial secretary. And Logan owned a lot of land around here at one time. And he was summoned to a meeting with the Indian one time, and the Indian said, "Oh, James Logan, you are such a fine fellow, and you have been such a friend to my people, and I want to remember you forever." And Logan kind of puffed out his chest a little bit. And the Indian said, "Now, it is the custom among our people that when we particularly honor somebody, we trade names with them." And James had a little bit of a problem because that meant that he would have to sign William Penn's official documents, Winnie Hawchenek. And he didn't really see that that was going to work very well for him. He was happy enough that the Indian would accept the name of James Logan, but he couldn't spell Winnie Hawchenek and wasn't sure how to configure it on a document.
So there were two James Logans.
So James was clever, and he said, "Oh, great chief, you are the finest in the country, and it has been a pleasure for me to do business with you, and I hope your children and my children shall live forever. But I am a mere mortal, and I am sensitive to the fact that I cannot live forever. But with your permission, I will convey your name onto yonder stream, which shall flow on forever." And of course, the chief thought that was really a great honor. The stream is now called Aquatong or Ingham Creek, and it never quite, the Logan name, or the Winnie Hawchenek name, never quite stuck on the creek, but that's incidental. But the restaurant is named for the Indian, and the sign, the cutout sign of the Indian with his bow and arrow, has been moved across the street to the Parry Mansion. And there it sits, rather than on top of the restaurant. But good place. The across the street is the Playhouse Inn. And this was built in the 1950s. The architect was Don Hedges. Don was a significant local architect. And he built the Playhouse Inn, which then became Zabar's, and then it became something else. It's now derelict with altercation between the town and whoever wants to take it over. It's not really big enough to be a big restaurant that would be economically feasible, so what will happen to it is still a question. The hope is that there will be a walkway, a boardwalk, along from the Playhouse Inn, the Playhouse, to the Playhouse Inn, and then probably up to the bridge, across to Lambertville. Mm-hmm. But so far, it sits there for the last 10 years or so. One of the more interesting joints was called the Canal House, which was on the canal, on Ferry Street. Ferry Street being the road that originally came down to the ferry and across to Lambertville. Canal House was owned by Johnny Francis, and there are certain local wags who renamed it the Carnal House. There was certainly some local rumor that that was an appropriate name for whatever you were interested in. It was a tar paper shack, basically. He never put any money into the building. He carried the money away. But Johnny Francis was in business for a long time, and that was a very popular pub. Across the street...
It's closed now, I think, isn't it?
Scanapico has taken over that land and built condos there.
I think the building's still there, the old building. But
is it?
Yeah.
I have to think about that.
Okay.
It was It was built of tar paper, and so.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was not a memorable building, and I don't think anyone could take it over and operate it.
Okay, so I'm thinking of a different place then.
There's a wonderful story about the towpath. I'm sorry, about the canal house. One night, the feds arrived, and they came in, and they went into the men's room, and they found a loose brick behind the urinal. And behind the loose brick, they found white powder. And they said, okay, close down, everybody out, pay your bill, and we're going to close the place and put a poster on the front door and close it down. And they said, okay, Johnny, you're obviously dealing in illegal substances. They obviously analyzed what it was, but they said, you know, this is a totally unsafe and disreputable operation, and you're closed. Big sign across the front, closed. And they said, we can settle this with the local justice of the peace. And Johnny said, no, I'm going to go to court and I'm going to get a jury. And so months went by, and finally there was a hearing before a judge in Doylestown. And the Freds presented their case that they found this powder, and it clearly was illegal substance. And it came time for Johnny to defend his position. And he said, Your Honor, these gentlemen are obviously correct in what they have found. But if they went into Grand Central Station in New York City, and they went to the men's room, and they found a loose brick, and they found powder behind it, would they be authorized to close down the New York Central Railroad? And the judge said, case dismissed. I assume they sealed up the brick after that.
Yeah, you know. Powerful argument.
Across the street was the Towpath House, and this was the site where there was the cut metal sign of the canal boat and the mule and the two young boys.
Is that the one where you go down the steps to it?
Sure.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
It's probably unsafe in wintertime, but it was a very popular place for a long, long time. The next one that I remember out of that era, there are obviously other restaurants along Canal Street, but I don't remember there being in existence back in the 50s. The next one, however, that I would cite is now called Havana, and it's doing booming business every night. But I remember it as Granny Neal's house. There was a lovely older lady who lived in there, had lots of Victorian furniture, and was related to friends of mine. The house was significant because it was said, probably reliably, that it was the first overnight stop for Aaron Burr after he shot Alexander Hamilton. And obviously, killing Hamilton was not a very nice thing to do in North Jersey, so he got on his horse and he rode south as fast as he could. He got to New Hope, and through some reason, he was able to stay in an apartment in the back end of Granny Neal's house. She's, of course, long gone, and Havana has been thriving ever since. Continuing south, there is Odette's, which was the River House, which has now been approved just recently for rebuilding. The River House was flooded any number of times because it's right on the river, between the river and the canal, and right next to the outlet or inlet of water to the southern half of the canal. It had a very good business, and it was owned by, I forget his name, but her name was Jean Halter, and she was a famous artist. She did paintings of the neighborhood a la Grandma Moses, and they were very popular and
sold very well. She did many of them. But the house, the building was built, was bought by Odette Myrtle. Odette was Bloody Mary in the show South Pacific for many years on Broadway. She obviously took home some money from that, bought a restaurant, and then had to sing Bloody Mary as a friend of mine every night for about 20 years or so. But she was quite a character, and of course, she drew a crowd, and the place did very well. But, you know, 405, 06, the floods demolished the interior. It has been derelict ever since. The recent approvals allow a totally new building to be built there. The old building has to be torn down, and the stones can be reused to build something that will be 12 feet higher than it is now for the main floor. Whether that's going to be a convenient entrance to a restaurant, I have no idea. But Odette was a character, and it is traditionally known as Odette's. The next one I mention is just in passing, Hamilton's. Jimmy Hamilton is still a famous character in the New Hope area. He started out as a set director and was in charge of the sets for the Playhouse in the Park in Philadelphia for many years. But he decided to retire to his favorite activity of cooking. He has two daughters and had a son who recently passed away. But the two daughters are in the restaurant business. One is in Brooklyn, and the other one is out here in what is now Hamilton's Grill over in Lambertville. But Jimmy Hamilton ran a restaurant in the old Silk Mill, which is up, Mechanic Street. At the upper end of it, it's now a private residence, but for a while it was earlier it was built as a silk mill and a cotton mill, and he turned it into a restaurant for a while, which was quite colorful. We might go across the river for just a couple of seconds here. I remember the river's edge. You go across the bridge from New Hope, turn left. And they're now condos. But there was an old mill there on the little creek that came out. And the exterior of the building remained. It had probably been burned. But the exterior remained, and there was an interior courtyard in which the proprietor had colorful game and game birds, all kinds of beautiful feathers. Enough of them were clipped so the birds didn't fly away, but it was really quite entertaining to see. The owner at that time was a lady named Anne Matthews, and she and her husband owned it. She had another career. She was Stella Dallas of radio fame, and she would be introduced every day on soap opera. Stella Dallas, can a poor girl from the Midwest find true happiness married to one of England's richest lords? And you can just take it from there. They covered everything, and they went on and on, and she had a Midwestern twang, and she would regale the audiences. She would commute to New York every day with the driver, and then she would come out and be hostess in her restaurant.
Run her restaurant. Did the question ever get answered?
No, it couldn't be answered. It had to go on and on and on. And they
so
had,
still waiting to get
they
answered.
They had a daughter, Lolly, and Lolly just got into all kinds of trouble. She just, you know, she didn't listen to her mom. And so, you know, it was one of the great soap operas of all time, Stella Dallas. But that world is long gone. I might mention Lambertville Station. Lambertville Station has seven different restaurants in different parts of the building. It's quite amazing. And when the modern owners took over, they realized they didn't have enough kitchen space. So they backed up a railroad freight car, and they simply built the kitchen into the freight car and locked the brakes, and that's where your dinner comes from now.
Wow.
The original building is significant architecturally. It was built by, the architect was William O. I'll think of it in a minute. At any rate, he was the architect for the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. And somehow or other, he came up here and built the Raymondville Station as a station.
Right.
And of course, in the 1950s and 60s, I remember it as a railroad station. With you went there with your Railway Express package to your mother in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
But it was turned into a total station. There is a plaque inside that tells you correctly who built it.
Mm.
But it's a famous name in American architecture. It
right.
just happens that he built a railroad station in Lambertville. And that was a big deal when the railroad operated until about 1976.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Belvedere Delaware Division Railroad that ran from Easton, Phillipsburg area down to Trenton.
Yeah.
A couple more. There was the what is now the Cock and Bull and also Earl's restaurant in Peddler's Village. The Cock and Bull was actually a chicken coop that I remember. It was a chicken farm in the days when chickens were raised all around this part of the country. And it was taken over by Earl Jamison. Earl had gone to Belldell College in Doylestown. I'm sorry, not Belldell. Delaware Valley College. And he graduated and started in the restaurant and landscaping business in that area of Peddler's Village. He was very successful with it, and it has grown. Last I heard, it was the fourth largest tourist attraction mall type shopping area in Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
Lancaster, Philadelphia, and Peddler's Village in Lahaska. But I remember wandering through there when it was a chicken coop, and I picked up a wooden egg. Now, the issue was if you raise chickens and a hen had decided to take a few days off, you put a wooden egg in her nest, and she said, oh, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to do. And so she ends up recreating eggs, and you take the wooden egg away, but the poultry farm had closed, and I ended up with the wooden egg for a long time. Next door to it is what is now the Golden Plow. All right, the name is vaguely right. It should be the Plow, but I don't think anybody ever referred to them as golden in the olden days. But a lot of inns on the country roads were the Plow. There was the Harrow up near Revere,
mm-hmm.
And there were a number of others. The Golden Plow used to be called the Button Whip because of a huge plane tree out front, a buttonwood also by name. And that was another place where you could get a nickel beer. It was important, man. I mean, you know, in the early days, that was the way to go.
Yes.
Continuing on over toward Buckingham, there is the General Green, which was then and is now still Edna's antique shop. Edna has to be getting on a little bit, and she doesn't really advertise. She just seemed to have junk out back. In one of my moments of silly vision, I thought of trying to buy it and run a restaurant. There is one major problem. It has location. It's right at the corner of 413 and 202. I mean, you can't do a better place. And it was the site of meetings of the associators, the patriots during the Revolution. So it has a long and colorful history, but it is now and may well remain a restaurant, an antique shop, because it's on a limestone belt. And what very few people realize is there is a limestone cave system that extends from Doylestown on over toward New Hope. And there are caves down underneath there. So as a result, there is no proper sewage. And every drop of sewage from that hotel in modern day would have to be hauled away.
Is that the building that's Nathaniel Green's headquarters in the Revolution? Mm-hmm. Same building? Okay.
It's a neat building.
There's a plaque to that effect out front.
Frankly, nothing has changed inside since at least 1950 and maybe 1900. It has wonderful fixtures inside and then has a series of rooms upstairs with numbers on the doors. Huh. It was a popular hotel, but I don't know that it's going to come back. It has the location, but it would be prohibitively expensive to operate there, and it doesn't have parking.
Yeah, parking would certainly be an issue.
The final one that I remember that's kind of fun that we went to occasionally was at Washington Crossing, and it's now the Washington Crossing Inn. Fine place, delicious food, vast crowds. It had reasonably vast crowds in the olden days. It was German-operated, and it was a beer hall. And you came out to the country, and you sit under the plane trees and the lindens, just like in Germany, and you bought beer and schnitzel and hot dogs, and it was very popular for tourists from Philadelphia. So it was also a fun place to go to.
And they've built a wonderful outside bar there now.
Yeah.
So they've continued tradition.
Yeah. They've also stolen some of the beer drinking space to make a parking lot. So in the olden days, there were not so many cars, and they needed the space for families to spread out.
Yep, and weddings.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of great places, and it's kind of amusing to look back and say, are there scenes to be remembered? Are there things to remember about some of them and where they came from? And that's my take.
Well, thank you, Will. That's a great review of taverns in and around the river and the county.
Thanks. Yeah, my local beer halls.
Okay, thanks very much.
You betcha.